people go back to a world where you go, instead of walking into your local butchers and buying your produce, or going to your greengrocers and buying produce, you'll order it online, just like you do from the big brands. So it's kind of like Amazon levels of convenience or eBay levels of convenience, but from your independence.
Welcome to the Winning E-Commerce Experience Show, where it's all about creating a brand that your customers love so they keep coming back. This show is brought to you by DataQ. Your store experience begins with your homepage. DataQ improves your conversion rate up to 30% by showing each visitor a personalized homepage based on their interest. And now, your host, Shyam Enver.
Hello, and welcome to our next episode. Our guest today is an e-commerce consultant. He's an industry veteran with over 12 years of experience. Luke Carthy, great to have you with us.
Great to be here, man. Thank you. Thank you very much for getting me on the podcast. It's a pleasure. It's awesome.
Yeah. So we have to talk about this before we even get into the content. Luke, do you want to just tell us where you are right now taking this podcast? This is such a great home office hack.
Yes, man, for sure. So I've got two kids. Obviously, we're in the thick of the pandemic right now, and everyone's in isolation. So I've got two kids who are literally screaming around outside in the garden and to try and get some sort of professional wave going on in this podcast. I've decided to lock myself in my car for half an hour's peace and quiet. This is like a mobile office, if you like. But I'm plugged in, I'm charged, I've got Wi-Fi. It's going to be cool. We're working out.
Yeah, and have you given them very strict instructions not to come banging on the door or in the car? Or like, how are you making sure they're not going to budge in?
Just snacks, man. Just throw the snacks at them, right? but no, mom's kind of taking care of things, so it's cool. We have a caretaker. They're entirely on their own. But
amazing.
Yeah. So if there is banging, it's definitely the children.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of the things which I think everyone needs to be a little bit more compassionate about, because this is the situation right now. Like, I still remember that. Did you see that BBC, interview where this expert was talking in North Korea, and then his kids come into the room and he was just so embarrassed?
Yeah, man.
I mean, that's going to be the norm, relatable, I think, for everyone right now. So, you know, I think a little bit more understanding for everyone's part is going to go a long way.
Yeah, for sure. I think to relate to that, I had some consultancy for a day with a client yesterday, and obviously I can't sit in my car for the entire day and work off a laptop. So sat at the dining table, the kids were in and out, and my daughter ended up becoming part of the session. So she had sort of 5 minutes on camera just to say hello and stuff. But yeah, for sure, you're absolutely spot on. Home life will be a part of professional life for the foreseeable, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think it makes you more relatable. And it takes the pressure off, you know, trying to separate business and personal.
Yeah. So now that we've sort of got that hack out of the way, so hopefully everyone's listening in. Hopefully you've got a new weapon in your arsenal on what to do if you need to have a quick call. Tell us a little bit about you, Luke. What's your origin story? You've got a lot of years of experience, I know, but maybe you can just walk us through really quickly so that everyone gets to know who you are.
Yeah, sure. So I've been obsessed with e-commerce since about the age of 16. I had my first job in electrical retail, and I was working at the time where HDTV was just coming out. So Sky HD was just launching, and long story short, HDMI cables were super expensive, sort of around £50. And I thought, there's no way a simple cable can cost this much. Mm-hmm. So I, long story short, bought some product from Alibaba from China, sold them relatively quickly, actually, in about a week or so, about 40 units. And I thought, wow, there's an opportunity here. So
nice.
It all started on eBay for me. I built a business over the next couple of years on eBay. It really blossomed from there. Got my first proper job, if you like, my proper agency job a couple of years after. And then across the years, I've worked at various in-house roles at e-commerce brands, agency roles at e-commerce places. And we kind of fast forward another 8-10 years or so, and here I am sort of drip feeding that advice, if you like, to clients in e-commerce space. So it's something I love to do, and I absolutely specialize in.
And you know, so that's a long history. I mean, it's not like e-commerce has been around for hundreds of years. It's relatively new, and I think one thing we'd all agree is that it's changing so quickly, right? But even in that sea of change, can you remember a single time in your history that we're faced with something like we are today with this pandemic?
No, man. This is this is on another level. I think the closest I've ever been to this is when I was an eBay seller and they ultimately rolled out a big change, a massive change to how the algorithm worked. So I was overnight impacted quite severely. It used to go off by sales impact. So the number of units you sold in that category would be the ranking signal, if you like, for that particular search query. But then it changed to sort of quality rating. It changed to delivery options. Like there was a load of different things in the algorithm that changed. And as a result, I lost a lot of visibility overnight. So I had to work really hard to get that back. But something on this scale where it's everybody is hit by it in some way or another, this is unprecedented for sure. It's a big one.
It's sort of like this very humbling experience as well, right? Because for some, it's not just e-commerce. It's literally every single person on the planet. I can't think of a single other example of this where we're kind of all having the same worries and fears. And obviously everyone's got their own unique set of things to worry about. But I, in a weird way, like we're kind of really all in this together now.
Yeah, we absolutely are. But do you know what I would say? There's definitely a stigma and a cliche when it comes to enterprise and corporate digital or corporate in any capacity is that corporate is slow, right? It's slow turning. It's a big vehicle. It takes a long time to pivot and change. Actually, hell no, that's not the case at all. Because if we look at this pandemic specifically, look how quick some of the world's biggest brands have managed to adapt. And we're talking like the kings like Microsoft. We're talking like companies like Slack. We're talking really big global brands who have managed to overnight virtually just completely transform how they do business. So I think what this will do going forward is put into question all of that stale, it's going to take 6 months to get this released kind of stuff, when actually there's proof here that when we all work together and we have all the same agenda in a company, things can be done really, really quickly. That's what I found the most surprising, I think, out of all of this so far.
Right, and this could probably be a good advice for anyone listening in, right? I mean, it doesn't really matter how big you are or small you are. It seems like the word of the day is how quickly can you adapt? Because things have changed so quickly. We're talking about the Microsofts and the Amazons and the Dysons because they're actually doing something like right now, which makes sense. Whereas maybe there's like a whole bunch of other companies who are also really big who haven't done anything. And so we're not talking about them. So this could be sort of, I guess, lesson number one.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, not all of the pivots have been positively received. I mean, if you look at, say, McDonald's, who at least in the UK, I don't know how it works in the rest of Europe or the rest of the world, but in the UK, all McDonald's branches have had to close. So no drive-throughs, nothing. It's ultimately off the high street. And for you to be able to, you know, for a company like McDonald's to be able to orchestrate something of that size, a closure, the shutdown, the handover to staff, that's a massive piece of work. And to be able to do that within sort of 24 hours or 48 hours is incredible. It's not a good thing to have to do, but it kind of shows that a company is essentially derived by its people. And I think all of this stuff that's going on right now, like you said earlier about Dyson, but you've got automakers who are ceasing production of vehicles, but are making ventilators, like you said. We've got I forget the name of the fragrance brand or the parent company of fragrance brand.
Was it LVMH?
Yeah, and they're making like loads of hand sanitizer, right?
Yes.
Like how do you go from producing fragrance for decades and then all of a sudden it's a whistle stop and you just start making hand sanitizer? That must be a huge operation. But the fact that we're doing this is I think it brings into question all of this stuff that we go on about how long things take and how difficult things are. Because clearly we have proof right now that actually it can be done, man.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like since we're the one constant right now is obviously change. So I think prediction becomes very difficult to do, but I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit and ask you, like, how are you thinking about the next 3 months? Like, how do you see, like e-commerce specifically being impacted?
Yeah, so e-commerce is one of, naturally, I guess I'm right in the thick of it, but e-commerce is going to go through, I imagine, quite a growth spurt over the next, call it 6 to 12 months. Because as you mentioned earlier, whether we were recording at the time or not, but you mentioned earlier about that there's more people who are forced to kind of use e-commerce, whether it's because they don't have the ability to go out.
Yes.
Or they've chosen, made the decision not to. Or it could be that using e-commerce is just less of an inconvenience than going out and battling, you know, the queues at supermarkets or putting yourself at risk. But I think people are forcing themselves to do things online that they wouldn't have done before. So this could be a more mature demographic, or this could be a demographic that's remote, or just haven't really thought about using e-commerce because they've had a car, they've had the ability to get out. But it's across the panel everywhere. You know, if we think about even buying clothes online, there's a lot of people I know, and there's a lot of brands out there in the world of apparel and fashion, where there's a huge amount of customers who don't buy clothing online because it's just too difficult to work out whether it will fit you or whether it's going to look good on you specifically, especially more so in women's wear. So sure. Even in a situation where that's the only option you have, makes you think differently about how you buy fashion, how you buy clothes, the questions you might ask when you're looking online. But I think e-commerce is going to have to adapt. It's going to grow exponentially, I think, over the next probably, again, 6 to 12 months. But equally, there's brands out there that have never done e-commerce before that have having to very quickly change from going to bricks and mortar to e-commerce. So it's definitely a massive change, probably for the better.
That's another big topic.
Both sides. Yeah, for sure. And I'm helping a few brands make that transition right now from, oh my God, we've had to close our shop, to how do we get all this sort of stuff online and out to a new market?
Oh, amazing. I'd love to talk about that a little bit, because I think there's quite a few people listening in as well having the same issue. But you know, before we get into that, I've asked this question from quite a few people, and the sort of consensus I've gotten is that there's going to be sort of like three phases, if you will. So we're kind of in this one phase where there's a lot of volatility, there's a lot of panic buying, people are not sure. So, you know, the kind of purchasing behavior is like really only on essentials. Anything else that's sort of deemed extra, nobody wants to invest because, you know, people have lost jobs and they're kind of worried about cash flow and things like that. You're probably seeing this in business as well. But eventually we're going to see sort of this very eerie sense of normal, where maybe quarantine is going to be the new normal, and hopefully the stimulus packages and all of that have already settled in and people have just gotten used to it. And then in the last bit, you're going to see, you know, I don't think this is going to last forever, and the quarantine is going to be lifted and people are going to go back. So it's almost like, yes, you're going to have a whole bunch of people who are forced into having to buy online, but then maybe businesses also need to think about like, okay, but eventually once we're all outside again, there's going to be sort of that swing back, if you will, but people are going to go back to doing physical shopping. So
yeah.
I guess it's like, you, whenever you're thinking about this, maybe you don't think too much about the last situation because we don't know when that's going to happen. But it is important to try to not just think about the panicky part and try to think, okay, like there is going to be an uptick soon.
There is, but this is purely my opinion. I don't have any data based on this, but I've had a long time to sort of think about it and maybe fabricate in my mind how normal will come about, like the, you know, how it was before this thing even kicked off. But actually, I think slightly different to yourself, in the sense that once the quarantine, if you like, is lifted and people can step outside their houses and return to some sort of normality, mm-hmm. I actually think the big pressure is going to be on the small to medium businesses to offer a really convenient e-commerce solution. So what I mean by that is, you know, we think about independent brands, so like, let's say, butchers or greengrocers or produce companies, even small fashion outlets. Mm-hmm. At the moment, a lot of these companies rely on footfall, right? They rely on passing traffic to get orders, to get business. Actually, I think what's probably going to happen is that there's going to be micro brands out there that end up investing efforts into technology into digital, whether it's a website presence or whether it's a comprehensive e-commerce presence. But I think we'll go back to a world where you go, instead of walking into your local butchers and buying your produce, or going to your greengrocers and buying produce, you'll order it online, just like you do from the big brands. So it's kind of like Amazon levels of convenience or eBay levels of convenience, but from your independence. So kind of think of like Just Eat for all of your small coffee shops, your cafes, and things like that. I think that would where things are going to go. And the reason why I say that is because I don't think there's going to be a normal for a number of years. And I know it sounds really depressing, but just because the government has lifted a quarantine doesn't mean that people are going to run in hordes back to normality. There's going to be apprehension and anxiety and people not wanting to commit in the same way they do. They might choose to not get the tube anymore and actually decide to do more, look for a remote role rather than going in a 9-to-5 in London because they've found another way to do work. I actually think that this will probably change for the better how the world does business. And I think e-commerce will be a huge part of that.
Yeah. And, you know, we were just talking about how there's always going to be, it's not a nice term, it never is, but, you know, winners and losers. And I guess it's that, you know, coming back to that idea of like, how quickly can you adapt? And hopefully you'll be on the right side of that equation, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think one of the things I've certainly seen, and again, I'm sure it's a global thing rather than just the UK, but you walk into, and this is a personal story of mine, so you walk into a supermarket in this pandemic and the meat counter is completely bare. There's no sort of fresh produce really there. Potatoes are out of stock and so on. But you walked to like a local butcher's or you take the time out to go into the town centres before obviously the pandemic was at its peak. And all these small independent family run businesses were virtually to the brim with stock. So meat was not a problem at all. You could get whatever you wanted. And sure, you pay a premium because it's, you know, potentially better quality or they don't have the buying power of some of these mega brands or mega supermarkets. But I think it will come a time where the reason why this happens is because there's a difference in convenience. You go to a supermarket, you get everything you need under one roof. But what about being able to go to a website and almost having like a compare the market or a confused.com, for example, or even a booking.com for your produce, your food and drink, where you just literally put in your location and you choose from a bunch of local suppliers who deliver that produce to you. I'd personally love to use something like that because I think everybody can feel the quality you get when you buy from farms or you buy organic and all this sort of good stuff. But convenience is just too convenient. So as soon as the family companies and the small independents become as convenient as the big brands, this is where I think that mega shift in buying power is really going to take off. And I think that will be forced as a result of the coronavirus pandemic.
Sure. Essentially, I guess it's fair to say that you're quite positive about the long-term effects on online and e-commerce. It seems quite that we don't know when it's all going to happen, but at least I think it's fair to say that you believe it's going to be positive over the long run. I guess now the question in a lot of people's minds is, okay, so what do we do in the short term? Because that I think we can all agree it's not going to be easy. So you know, like if for someone listening in right now who says, well, that's all well and good, and I'd love to be there when this happens, but, you know, right now I've got very different problems. You know, like what would you say to them? Like, how would you sort of approach that?
Yeah. So there's definitely a few clients I have that are in this exact same predicament right now, which is, you know, a kind of overnight drain of resources, if you like. You know, their footfall has died. So to give an example, I've been speaking to a couple of brands, actually. One that does sort of party stuff, you know, sort of festive wedding gifts, all that sort of stuff. And naturally, anything that's in events right now is kind of dead in the water. They don't have any kudos there at all because people are cancelling events like you wouldn't believe, of course. So the pivot that these guys are making is actually, why don't you change your angle? Why don't you find where your new audience is in the short to medium term? And for them, party supplies isn't that much different to kids' toys or kids' entertainment or kids' playthings, right? So instead of selling, say, I don't know, a Toy Story costume for like some fancy dress dad do or something like that, How about you sell similar sort of things to children so they can role play, or they have things to do to keep the parents busy, or you could sell like pantomime kits for home. So it's exactly the same product. It's just positioned in a different way. You start to look after a different audience. You position your products in a different light. And that's how you guess you become relevant. So I guess that's yes. one thing that you could certainly do is, mm-hmm. is change your marketing, if you like, from your typical bread and butter, what you was used to something that's a bit more celebrity of being at home. And I think the thing to make very clear here is I'm not a big fan of this whole coronavirus bandwagon where people are just jumping on and having like Black Friday-esque sales for coronavirus. I don't think that's great, but you know,
been in that's a situation insensitive where, as well, right?
Yeah, big time, big time. But been in a situation where you can where you can change and adapt your strategy is great. So I think another example here is training. I think every time you go onto Instagram now, there's some kind of training, you know, advertisements going on, and it's just kind of, you've got all this extra free time potentially if you've been laid off or mm-hmm. you've got less work. Why not spend that time into investing in the career you've always wanted, whether it's a change or a upskill or whatever. So I'll give you a perfect example. You wouldn't believe this is one of the surprising winners at the moment. So
okay.
I'm a big fan of car detailing, a bit of a petrol head. Okay. And you'd assume that because nobody's driving anywhere, no one's buying car cleaning products right now because mm-hmm. no one's taking their car anywhere. Actually, because there's a lot of people with free time and they want to get outside, they're working on their cars. They're cleaning their cars, they're detailing their cars, they're looking at the interiors, and they're doing maintenance and you know, cleaning and looking after their vehicles in a way that they wouldn't have done before because they never had the time to do it. So car park companies are doing well. Valentin supplies companies are doing well, but they're starting to put together gift packages, if you like, or isolation packages, which is kind of like, you know, you can go through and really look after your car in a certain kind of way with this newfound time that you have.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think the point I guess I'm trying to send here is changing your marketing strategy or finding audiences that you can now leverage is really powerful to help you to stay afloat.
I really like that. I think it's a very positive way of looking at it. Instead of just trying to, I guess, you know, if you're doing this, like what you just mentioned, the coronavirus discount, you're kind of sort of, it's kind of like giving up, right? It's a very negative reaction yeah. to say, well, nobody wants this, so here, I'm just going to cut my prices. Not to say that discounting is bad, but in this sense where if you take it on a more positive approach by thinking, well, let me try to solve an actual problem that my audience may have. It might be different to what I originally was solving. If I can solve that, then I'm back to being relevant again. And that's really what you want in this business.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think to extend the answer to that question you had even further, then there's going to be brands and businesses out there that have, I think neglect's a bit of a strong word, but maybe deprioritize their digital investment.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they might have a really basic website or they might have no website at all. How do they get online quick? And when I say quick, I mean like in the next couple of business days, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have this constant argument about, not argument, but discussion about Shopify or WooCommerce or, you know, what is the fastest way for a brand to go from zero to like 100 to be able to sell online?
Right.
And I don't know whether that's kind of like a pillar for another part of this conversation, but so stop me if I'm in the wrong spot. But what I will no, say is, it's cool. We're good.
Yeah,
we're good.
Yeah, of course. Right. So, yeah, we can talk about whatever you want as long as it's e-commerce. Go ahead.
All right, brilliant. So there's kind of two at the forefront here. Shopify is no surprise, of course. That normally comes up number one. It's like the Google of e-commerce, if you like. But They've the one, the underdog job. That they are, and that's a perfect example of I'm not going to say taking advantage, but almost doubling down on a downturn, right? Because mm-hmm. everybody wants e-commerce right now. And Shopify have responded by offering a 90-day free trial. So normally it's 14 days.
Yeah.
What these guys are doing is like, hey, look, we want to help. So let us give you, you know, let us multiply our free trial by sixfold or whatever the math is. And that's awesome because they could have just left it at 14 days and probably cleaned up faster. They could have probably you know, made more money by having a shorter free trial, but they genuinely want people to buy into their ecosystem. Brilliant. Mm-hmm. WooCommerce did a very similar thing where they launched WooCommerce 4.0 and they gave 40% off all of their premium plugins. So again, they could have just left it. They could have just been in a situation where they went, you know what, we're going to make money anyway, man. Let's just leave it, charge everyone full price. But they haven't. And this is a perfect example of pivoting. But going back to the CMSs, I think Shopify is a great platform if you have zero tech experience, you don't know anyone necessarily with any tech experience, and it's a quick way of getting online. But my personal prerogative would always be WooCommerce, because you own it, in the sense of it's on your hosting environment. It's a lot more flexible. The SEO is better. And it pays dividends in the long run to be on WooCommerce, because there's typically no monthly retainers. And we could go about the pros and cons. We'll do another hour of just WooCommerce and Shopify. But I
think this comes down to the topic of, you know, what we just mentioned a little bit earlier about how we're going to see a lot of brick and mortar retailers who weren't online before, and now they're suddenly all thinking of getting online because that's literally the only way to sell. So, you know, I think it's a good segue into this topic where you mentioned tech platforms. I think that's a very important consideration. And of course, there's, you know, a lot of stuff out there. I think you just did a very good job of just giving the most major ones, which is that if you're not very tech savvy, Shopify seems to be very good. And if you're probably a little bit more tech savvy and you want to really own your platform, then WooCommerce is probably another option. But what else would you sort of, maybe is that like a framework or sort of an approach which you'd suggest someone listening in who's thinking about going online, who's never been online? Like, what are, say, the top three things they should be thinking about right now to make that jump?
Yeah, so first of all is definitely your platform, because everything is based upon it. Everything is hinged off it. So that's definitely a big consideration. And I think one of the other things as well is just when you're creating your content, when I say content here, we've got to remember that this is going to be, for many businesses now, a quick and dirty fix, like a panic almost. I've got 72 hours to knock something up. Can we just go away and do it? I'm not talking about your content calendar for the next 12 months, right?
Yeah. So,
but my point is your content needs to completely embrace why you are in business in the first place. What is it you've brought to the table? Why is it you've managed to survive on the high street after all those years? Tell me about your family. Tell me about how you're surviving the coronavirus. Tell me about what's unique about what it is you make, your produce, your service. And that's really important, because it's really easy to go and knock up a Shopify shop and put on, you know, 30 or 40 products. That's the easy part. But telling someone why they should care, how you exist and where your unique selling points are, that's what's difficult. That's what's tricky. And the funny thing is, we live and breathe it every single day. But as soon as someone asks you to tell them about it, it's like everyone freezes, me included. You know, tell me about yourself. It's like,
Yeah, it's always the most uncomfortable thing, right? Like even with those job interviews, what are your five biggest strengths? What?
Exactly.
Basically tech platform, and then like get your content in order, like tell your story, to really talk about why you're unique.
Yeah, and then you've got to leverage the audience you already have, right? So
yes,
what I mean by that is if you have a high street presence, or you have an email marketing list, or you know, you're well known in the town because of the service you provide in that area, reach out to those people, man. You know, get on Facebook and say, you know, this is happening. This is how we respond to it. Spend maybe, you know, whatever money you can, whether it's $50, £50 or something more substantial on marketing your new website. But then put the reason why you're here. So don't just do like a banner ad for like, hey, we've launched acmebutchers.com. Go to it. I mean, look, if you can get the owner to stand in front of a camera and say, look, we understand that in a pandemic, there is people who need good quality food who don't want to go outdoors. Supermarkets are constantly bare of produce. It's a fight to the tills, all this sort of stuff. How about you have, you know, grass-fed, organic, properly looked after. We're a family butchers for 50 years, and we want to make sure that people who don't want to go out or are at risk can still get really good quality meat delivered to their door. That all of a sudden changes the reason as to why you're online, because you've got an origin story, you've got a quality product, you know?
And that's, it's not just like, please buy from me because I'm online. It's saying, hey, please buy from me because here's how I can help you.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Now, I'm not going to promise that this is like a silver bullet and it's going to help you overnight. But if you're going to put the time in to go and spend a couple days, 3 days knocking up an e-commerce website of some capacity, then you need to pour your, not heart and soul, that's too strong, but you need to definitely inject your personality, your reason why your business exists and why you've decided to build an e-commerce offer.
You know, I mean, I'd sort of pad that as well, because the other impact of what you just talked about, you know, with WooCommerce doing 40% off the premium plugins, Shopify doing a 90-day trial, it's exploding. You've got so many e-commerce sites that are starting now. Like, I mean, we even get the same data because, you know, we have a plugin on multiple platforms, and I see people signing up, and the number of people who are signing up now who haven't really been online very long is just through the roof. So this means that if you are doing it too, then you really do need to stand out, and there's no better way to stand out than to talk about your story, because that's unique to you, right?
Yeah. As long as it connects with your user base and they can see what's in it for them, then absolutely. I mean, I think I've seen so many unique, really cool brands actually that I've never seen before who have reached out to me and said, hey, look, can I just pick your brain for 15 minutes or whatever? So like, perfect example, I'm working with I've offered some to help a brewery based in the UK, a completely sort of craft beer company. And they've had to, you know, their biggest business were distributing directly to pubs, which of course are all closed, and selling their own beer via their tap room, their own on-site distillery, if you like, not distillery, beer, you know what I mean? On-site, off-license. They've had both of their main income streams chopped in half, or completely gone, if you like, overnight due to this coronavirus thing. So they're in a situation now where they're kind of like, oh my God, what do we do, man? Like, so exactly the same things I'm talking about in this podcast to yourself is, do that, you know, tell people why they should care about your brand. Tell these people that you can have really good quality beer delivered to your door without going out. Bring the pub home rather than having to go to the pub. And then we spoke about things like adding value rather than giving discount. So food is a scarcity. And I don't mean that in the sense of there's not enough. I just mean it's harder to come by. You've got to go to three supermarkets and fight through queues and all that sort of nonsense. Mm-hmm. Why don't you just give like a free bag or free six pack of crisps with every order over X, because it's kind of like people have to work harder to get snacks, to get food, to get that comfort food. So if you can deliver that for free alongside the beer, as far as they're concerned, you almost like remove that barrier as to
like
why they
two birds with one stone kind of thing, right?
Exactly.
Right. So one of the things which we talked about was, you know, in terms of your expertise, I think bringing like all pretty much everything which we're talking about right now is like how to get people to pay attention and come to your store.
Yeah.
And one of the big pillars of that is obviously SEO, because now with more people spending time at home, it means they're probably spending much more time on Google, even on social media. So, you know, typically, SEO is a very long-term strategy. You got to think about your keywords, and then you know you really got to just work on that. But now that everything sort of changed, do you have different advice now to your clients on how to approach SEO? Like, how have you changed your thinking around this at all?
Yeah, I have. I think the first thing to certainly set straight, I think, is there's two there's one main connotation when it comes to SEO, and it's kind of the first connotation or first cliche, if you like, is getting more organic traffic to your site. And yeah, for sure, that's the long game, if you like, the technical side, the changes you need to make. And I get all of that. But actually, this is about quick, incremental changes you can make to try and adapt. So I would say the SEO terminology here is broader. So you're actually thinking about on-site search. So how can you optimize your on-site search to better convert? Maybe if you don't offer live chat, for example, you add live chat to allow people to understand if they've got any questions about coronavirus specifically or returns, or are you still actually open with all this stuff going on? Can you help me? But, you know, so I guess there's, it depends on how you pocket it, but clients will normally see SEO as something they invest in to get more money from search engines rather than an increase in traffic. They don't really care about the traffic. They more care about a return on investment. So when I'm working with clients, I think I almost water down the strict definition of SEO, because if I can make them more money with the traffic they have, or find ways of bringing more traffic at a higher conversion rate, then that is more powerful for them right now and in general than you know, improving rankings for this keyword, because no one is looking for those keywords right now. You know, someone who sells, let's say, designer shoes, it doesn't matter if I'm ranking on page one, result one for designer shoes all of a sudden, because I've invested in that keyword. Sure. No one cares, because no one is buying designer shoes right now. So actually, the thing to look at in the medium to probably, you know, in the short to medium term is actually, what can we do to make the traffic that we have convert better? So to give you a perfect example, and I did a blog post about this, which I can pass you the link after, is two really big healthcare brands here in the UK. So one is called Holland & Barrett, which you may or may not have heard of.
Yep.
And the second one is a super drug. There we go. It lost me for a minute. And these are really big healthcare providers. So when the coronavirus pandemic kicked off, if you went to these sites and you search for the word coronavirus, it would show no results found. Wow. I think that's hugely ironic for healthcare brands, right?
Sure.
Now, for any, you know, if these brands sell all sorts of stuff that could help, I mean, it's not going to fix the problem, but it could help alleviate some of the symptoms. So, you know, paracetamol, or, you know, things to help with your fever, et cetera, you know, hand sanitizer, hand wash, all this sort of stuff, antiseptic wipes.
Or even links to the NHS, which has good advice on what they could do, right? So even content isn't a bad option to go with. If you are not a healthcare professional, then, you know, at least you're helping people find the right information.
Exactly. And I think the point I'm trying to make here is that's not necessarily an SEO point of view, but it's just making sure that the traffic you get is served properly. So a lot of people's concerns right now are probably going to be, you know, if I buy this, what if I need to send it back? What if I can't afford it? What if someone, you know, what if I'm not out of a job in 2 weeks because the company closes down?
Yeah.
Well, one way you could respond as a business is maybe to extend the returns window. You could go from your 30 days statutory returns to 60 days because postal delays, because Amazon are under pressure and therefore they can't process returns as quick. Having these small gestures and small things to help, it could be a way that you find you can get more sales, and as a result of that, more traffic. But it's not cliche SEO, if you like. I think if this was a podcast conversation about e-commerce SEO in general, what I'd be saying to you would be slightly different. But you know, sticking with the pandemic specifics, these are the sort of things I guess you have to go after.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but what you're saying is don't worry about SEO too much. Think about your conversion rate optimization more. Like, what can you do for people on site to help them through that funnel, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think to kind of maybe just to expand on that a little bit, if your SEO is in a good position already and you just want to find ways to make it better, then I would say yes, absolutely focus on your CRO first. If your SEO is in a terrible state and it's been in a terrible state for a year or 6 months or so, then working on it now, SEO, strictly speaking, isn't going to change things a lot unless you're in an industry that is doing well from the pandemic, or you can find opportunities in ways that you can. But you've also got to think that it might take 4, 6, 8 weeks, depending on resource, depending on a lot of different variables, how quick you can reap the rewards from this SEO investment. So why don't you change the things that you can do within hours, days? And then once you've got them impacted, you can then look at your long-term strategy. But SEO is a nightmare right now, even for measuring, because the demand is down, everything's kind of media focus. Even if it doesn't matter what you search for, there's probably some news somewhere that relates it back to coronavirus or something. And it's painful for reporting, for all sorts of things, it's painful. So it's very much about CRO and UX, and just really kind of resonating with your customers right now.
And I'd really just like to reiterate what you said a little bit earlier, just for our listeners, because I've seen a lot of stores do this very well, and some that shockingly have not. I think this communication around how the coronavirus is impacting your business is very important to communicate upfront. So for instance, even something simple like a banner that says, "We are still delivering," could go a long way to solve a problem. And then, you know, I've seen some other merchants where they've actually dedicated a whole page where they talk about, you know, for all the things that they're doing to stay sanitary, like the, you know, the, how they clean everything and how they follow the stricter standards, what the delivery times can be expected to be, and, you know, just sort of having this very proactive kind of communication, which obviously takes a lot of doubt away from the customer when they're on your site, when they're not even sure if they're going to get the product or not, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there's already like, can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can still hear
you. Okay. Yeah, I think I lost you for a second there. Yeah, so I think there's a lot of really good advice here. It seems that like that we don't really need to think about sort of panicking or anything like that. It's just like, can we take some practical steps in the short term to sort of allay people's fears and hopefully find ways to keep them sort of happy on your site? So things like you just mentioned, have products where you try to market them slightly differently so that they fit the relevancy, have better communication on your site, maybe do a chat widget where people can actually talk to you. And then hopefully if they can get through this in the long term, like you just said, we're going to see an uptick in e-commerce. So that's sort of like an overall positive story, right?
Absolutely. I think just to maybe add some context here, I think if I'm going to throw myself in the deep end real quick, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Yeah, okay. Oh, I thought I lost you for a second. We've been going back and forth. Right, okay. So let's look at travel, which is probably arguably the worst impacted industry in the entire of this pandemic. You may have seen a lot of noise on Twitter and Instagram of people who are almost boycotting brands because of the way that they've handled refunds or customer service issues or from certain airlines or travel providers or whatever. But, you know, one thing that certainly stood out to me is I remember booking a hotel room with a chain of hotels called the Jury's Inn, and I booked it on a non-refundable, you know, it's like a 30% off deal. And the event I was attending got cancelled, Brighton SEO got cancelled. And I was like, okay, I'm screwed. I've basically lost that whatever it was, that money. But they actually sent an email to all of their customers and said, look, whether you're non-refundable or refundable, if you are refundable, we'll give you your money back if you want it. But if you're non-refundable, we're going to allow you to move the date and change it to any date within the next 24 months. And that's amazing. Really powerful, because that means me as a customer, I'm now going to invest more time and more effort into looking at Jury's Inn places to stay. Equally, brands that handle this poorly, like say Sports Direct, which is a brand here that insisted that they were an important shop, although they only sell sports equipment and sports gear, they're going to be boycotted. People aren't going to want to spend any money there. So my point here is that just because you can't necessarily financially benefit from this doesn't mean that how you treat your customers isn't going to have a positive or negative impact going forward. And travel is absolutely one of those spotlight areas right now.
Love it.
Where there's empathy. Definitely winners and losers. Yeah, big time. That goes a long way.
So I think we've had a really good conversation so far. And there's a lot of things to chew on, especially if you're already in e-commerce and you're wondering what to do. I hope this has been helpful. I'm sure it has. Luke, maybe you can tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you if they want to know more.
Yeah, for sure. So fortunately for me, I've got a relatively unique name. So you can Google me, Luke Carthy, or lukecarthy.com. Or you can find me on Twitter, again, search for Luke Carthy, and on LinkedIn as well. So if anyone's wondering how to spell my surname, because it throws up a few question marks at times, it's C-A-R-T-H-Y. But yeah, if you need me, you can find me for sure.
Luke, pleasure having you on the show. Thank you very much.
It's been awesome. No, thank you very much.
You're still here, which means you definitely enjoyed that conversation. This is a special COVID-19 e-commerce miniseries to help small business merchants out there get prepared. We're doing a lot more of these, so be the first to know whenever there's a new episode. Just follow DataCue, that's DataCue, on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn. Stay safe out there, everybody. Till next time, this is Sharam.